Most people, most of the time, don't want to think about banks. They're like the plumbing, out of mind until there's a leak. Well, fetch the mop. After the high-profile collapses of banks in the US and Switzerland, investors have been on high alert for any more weakness. Well, Fidelity's top investor, Global Chief Investment Officer to be precise, Andrew McCaffrey, joins me now. Welcome.
Hello, Richard.
Well, we're speaking on Tuesday lunchtime, and investors appear to have calmed down after a lot of volatility in recent days. Can you give us a sit rep, Andrew, a situation report? Where are we now as far as markets right here, right now?
Yeah, so I think that what we've seen in the last week is framing a number of the sort of ranges that we may see for a while. Specifically, when we look at the bond markets and what they discounted coming into last week, which was very much the concern of the banking system as a whole being in a lot of problems, and therefore financial stability being at risk, and therefore interest rates would have to be cut rather than just a liquidity injection in the short term. On the other side of that, I think that what has been important is noting that much of the initial volatility that we saw has started to calm down. And this is an important ingredient because on one side, it's the expectations of how they can stem some of the challenges for the individual banks that we were seeing that were under a lot of threat from, you know, market concerns. But the real follow through is then, do we see volatility across asset classes, especially in the rates markets, start to ease? And at the moment, it's still elevated, but it has come off the peaks. It's showing signs of declining now. And I think that's very important because as we sit here today, then we're seeing markets basically a bit more stable. Interest rates have gone up again officially from the central banks, but the nature of what they said with that has varied. But overall, the markets have interpreted that there is a pause out there on the horizon. And secondly, that, you know, now the liquidity has come into the system, that it can just provide a little bit of calming. And that's where the markets are today, I think, looking to the slightly glass half full as opposed to half empty.
Well, let's hope it stays that way for a bit longer. But what you were describing there is a tension between the financial stability of the system and price stability of inflation that we've talked about incessantly for the past few months, at least. And, you know, that isn't going away at the moment, is it? If we think about that balance and what the central banks are seem to be very focused on now, which is not giving up on the price stability battle, the bank crisis, which, you know, is certainly an abeyance right now, let's hope it doesn't come back, has that increased the likelihood of a recession in the US, do you think?
So I think there's a few things just initially to unpack. First of all, is that the markets don't believe the central banks in their willingness and their belief that they can differentiate between the financial stability and that target of price stability, i.e. that they think, you know, their actions around providing liquidity can stem some of that stability concern. And at the moment, you know, first signs are that we are seeing that decline in volatility, we're seeing a little bit of a confidence returning, because it clearly was a very distinct trust and confidence deficit building if we weren't careful. On the other side is moving the rates to stem that medium-term concern that they're not seeing inflationary pressures ease as quickly as they would have liked. And I think the markets are saying, no, they're interlinked. The speed and level of interest rate moves is part of the problem that's creating financial stability. So you have to address both. And that will be, I think, you know, the challenge as we go forward. But when we look at the consequences into the economy from this, then, you know, the short-term impact, that liquidity, financial markets, they get that rush of adrenaline. And I think that's helping to provide the calming. The second part, though, is then what does this play back in terms of credit conditions? What does it play back in terms of the real underlying confidence being, you know, restored, and then we can continue to look at activity picking up? And I think those have now been challenged, to a degree that will mean as we look into the second half of the year, we already saw clouds gathering. The resilience at the consumer and corporate level has been very impressive and still continues. But as we look forward, the challenges around how long that could continue, given cost of living pressures continue, the way the interest rates feed through over time into all parts of the economy, the way that we're seeing activity levels quite late cycle naturally and activity turning over in some of the corporate sectors, and then the degree to which that would feed through and we see unemployment pick up. All of these now seem to be a higher risk in the second half of the year, looking towards 2024. And I think the banking challenges that this has highlighted in the recent past are not going to go away entirely, but they've been stemmed for the short term.
Okay, and the banking challenges and the way that the system has adjusted to them. I've read, you know, various estimates that this has added 50 basis points, 100 basis points, even 150 basis points in terms of financial conditions in the US. And we were talking before all of this happened that interest rates, you know, the only effect that they could have if they kept on rising was to tip the US over into a recession, with a very slim chance, the very small pathway that you talked about of a soft landing, but, you know, looking increasingly more narrow.
Yes, I think the odds, to put it simply, have gone up of a harder landing, because one, that credit condition profile, which was already deteriorating. So, you know, whether you look at some of the surveys around senior loan officer activity and expectations for lending standards, if you look at the nature of what we were seeing in terms of just the momentum going through the economy, there were clear signs that this was starting to stagnate, if not turn over. But I think that as we look forward, and my point about the banks is not that all of a sudden there's another bank tomorrow that we see another confidence issue around deposit levels. It's that with this activity and the liquidity burst in the short term, still some of the conditions that higher interest rates in terms of the nature of where lending will take place will have contracted. And that's, you know, taken away from the future support that we see. I mean, the interesting part of financial conditions is that obviously interest rates move from the Fed, from the ECB, from the Bank of England, but bond markets have seen yields come down dramatically. We've seen asset levels stabilize. So the financial conditions, you know, haven't tightened significantly. They've eased quite substantially, as you're alluding to. And the challenge now is that, is that enough of a pathway to again marry these different conditions of financial stability, ensuring the economy stays stable with that, and getting that price stability? But also remembering that the Fed mandate that can look at those and it's embedded around unemployment and price stability is not the same when you look to the ECB, where it's very much achieving a price mandate. And I think that's why you have slightly different conditions in terms of the commentary and narrative, but also the way the market's responded in terms of what it's discounted in the US and what it hasn't discounted in Europe.
So it's unbending rhetoric, really, coming from the ECB, absolutely focused on price stability there. And actually here in the UK, although the Bank of England has, you know, sort of been a little bit softer in its reaction, the comments from Andrew Bailey have all been around not giving up at all on the fight for price stability. So if I summarise correctly, you're saying we're in a holding pattern at the moment. They might be turning off the taps with one hand in terms of interest rates, because, you know, went up another 25 basis points in the US last week. But at the, on the other hand, or with the other hand, they're opening the tap with liquidity. That's all sort of keeping us above water at the moment. I'm sure I'm mixing metaphors here, but there's lots of water going around. Back to my mop in the beginning. It's the second half of the year where you think this might start to be an issue.
Yes, because we're back to something we've discussed a long way, that the elements of mistakes we thought that were made by not tightening earlier, one, now move into the point of how do you get to that very narrow landing strip around soft landing, you know, i.e. being able to navigate price stability without really pushing the economy over the edge. And I just think that the odds on that have again moved in favour that they will not hit that landing strip, that there will be something that has to be given up. And it may be that actually that they do move, and therefore price stability is not necessarily achieved in anything but the short term. And that resurrects challenges going forward. But I think the important part is that when we top all of these items up, we tend to be thinking that the economy will be challenged and there will be a greater risk of a hard landing as we go through the latter part of 23. And that sets up for an interesting set of events for 24 as well, because obviously on the other part of, big part of the global economy is China, which we see as not going for a sort of a boom period in terms of stimulus, but going for a sustained growth environment. And that will be constructive, but it won't necessarily have the same level of credit impulse or that sort of boom stimulus going more broadly across the global economy. And that could have ramifications later on, where we have, as I said, slightly the complication I've mentioned before of taking up some of the goods and materials prices as you see that recovery coming through at a time where you're seeing some of the challenges at an economic activity level coming through in the US, possibly the UK and to Europe.
So China would export inflation to the US?
Well, I don't think China would be exporting inflation. I think it's the fact that you will see material levels and the prices that we've seen quite depressed as we've gone through this year, which have actually been quite deflationary, start to stabilize and pick up again. And so that's little bit of a tailwind helping the price stability then starts to dissipate from what it's been, rather than an inflationary impulse coming from China directly. But again, when you look at the central bank reaction mechanism, what I think is very interesting in this environment we're in today is that the ECB has now got to prove its credentials around its 2% target from inflation being way above. And the first time we've really seen in their history that this is now, true inflation, true challenge that they have to meet. The Fed, and maybe to a degree the Bank of England, have had a history and a longer history where they've had a success at defeating inflation, taking the US, the 70s into the early 80s, the period of disinflationary forces that created the great moderation that we've had until literally coming into to COVID and post-COVID. That against the Great Depression, where they feel, and we've had numerous papers, as we know from Mr. Bernanke and others, on how that was a challenge they're never going to repeat not being able to overcome. And why I say this is that there's also a slightly different mechanism as well in terms of the leverage profiles. We often talk about leverage and think that that's a challenge for all countries. It is. But I think that what we've seen exposed in the US is that the system and the degree to which some of the fragility that runs through the banking system is actually greater, because it's not just about the largest 4 to 6 banks. It's about a very distributed system and where exposures lie. Obviously, a lot of focus today on commercial real estate. That's one area of potential concern, because so much of the lending is obviously by its nature illiquid, 3 to 5 years in nature, coming up for rollover. You need that deposit strength and liquidity to be able to support it at the banking level, but it's done by the small and regional banks. And if they are challenged, then what will that mean for, again, at a system level, of how that feeds through into credit creation or credit contraction? And I think that the US is in a more challenging position than we see in many other countries around the world, despite the expectations that it is more resilient and that it has all the tools. Actually, it's creating a much more challenging profile, where the outcome could be having to consider the degree of interest rate tightening, QT, what that means for the dollar, weakening, and all of this against a backdrop where we've all forgotten that there is a big political crisis brewing with the debt ceiling and the politics more generally as we go towards the primaries later on in the year.
Well, I was going to start wrapping up the conversation, Andrew, but it feels like we've got another 3/4 of an hour to go. I'm afraid we don't have time, though. I will ask you one last question. You've mentioned real estate, which is something that people have been talking about, and I know that the conversations within Fidelity have been about being aware of where will the cracks appear. We knew as interest rates started to go up that cracks would appear somewhere, and it eventually it appeared in banking. Real estate aside, where else should people be keeping their eyes open at the moment?
Yeah, so I think that one of the things you can't lose sight of is the fact that we've had an incredibly successful period for the private equity industry and the way in which that has increased at a size and importance in the economy that has been very positive, very vibrant. Obviously, one of the challenges we've seen around Silicon Valley Bank is that, you know, the disruption and credit contraction that may create within parts of the venture business, you know, yet to be seen, but certainly, you know, elements that would be challenging. At a broader level, that there is still a lot of capital and, you know, credit will be required as you see the rollover of exposure for many of the companies in the private economy. And I think also to a degree that when we look forward, that you have gradually the refinancing challenges increase through 24, 25, 26, you know, in parts of the economy and parts of the corporate world that have done very well from refinancing and pushing out their term profile, obviously in Q2 of 2020, especially. And all of these become ever more important as we look forward. So I think the next part is to look through where we have challenges more broadly in credit and therefore some of the individual sectors that are challenged by access to credit, possibly going forward, to the ability to refinance efficiently, and then to expose into being more zombie-like than really highly dynamic and proficient companies looking forward.
So it's the age of free money has ended, we know that, and it's important to have a look at where companies are getting their money from now and how expensive that will be and when they're going to have to shift on to more expensive loans.
And to a degree, it's looking at those who have been very sensible and pushed out the length of their exposure, so not needing that refinancing soon, potentially getting, you know, the benefits of the concern around that refinancing, but also have the cash flow that now is very, you know, positive relative to what we see because of they've termed out that debt longer. And that really is something that may be, you know, extremely important as we look through the next 6, 12, 18 months.
Helpful and fascinating, Andrew. We have gone longer than I anticipated, but it's been really interesting. Thank you very much indeed. Thank you also for listening. You can read more analysis on the latest banks and Fed news on your local Fidelity website or at fidelityinternational.com. The producer today was Holly Eastman with technical support from Connor Bailey. Until next time, from all of us at Fidelity, goodbye.
This podcast is for investment professionals only and should not be relied upon by private investors. This podcast is provided for informational purposes only and is intended only for the person or entities to which it is sent. It must not be reproduced or circulated to any other party without the prior permission of Fidelity. The value of investments can go down as well as up, so you may get back less than you invest. For other important legal notices, please visit your local Fidelity website.